Blog Talk Radio.
This podcast is brought to you by PEMCO Capital Management. PEMCO Capital Management provides an institutional platform for accredited investors to gain exposure in niche sectors within the distressed residential mortgage and real estate markets. Visit PEMCO Capital Management on the web at www.pemco-capital.com. Now your host of Capital Markets Today, Louis Amaya.
Welcome to Capital Markets Today, and this is Louis Amaya. In April, the unemployment rate increased from 4% to 14%, the largest one-month increase in history. It is likely that the unemployment rate hits 20% in May, and some forecast a 25% unemployment matching that of the Great Depression. However, the more concerning percentage is the estimate by many economists that 40% of the jobs lost during the COVID-19 crisis will be permanent. No matter how the numbers turn out, there could be a significant impact to mortgage defaults, especially on modified and FHA mortgage loans. Joining the podcast today to discuss the outlook for real estate note investing is Cody Faller, founder and chief investment officer of Faller Financial. Faller Financial works with investors across the country from large banks to hedge funds to individual note buyers. We'll get started right after this message.
As we head into a market that is uncertain at best, don't take your eye off your core competencies. Use trusted partners to assist in managing your risk so you can focus on growing your business. PEMCO Limited provides nationwide REO services. This has been and will always be PEMCO Limited's core business. PEMCO Limited has sold over 200,000 properties in the past 10 years and provides real estate services for HUD, Fannie Mae, USDA, and GSA, as well as firms in the private sector such as private equity funds, hedge funds, family offices, and servicers. So, rely on PEMCO Limited for your real estate needs to optimize your internal resources while limiting your operating expenses. From boarding to closing, our expertise and vast network of brokers, contractors, closing attorneys, and eviction attorneys will ensure your asset is managed effectively and timely, extracting the most value out of even the most difficult properties. For more information, please go to www.pemco-limited.com or email us at info@pemco-limited.com. Again, that is www.pemco-limited.com and info@pemco-limited.com.
Cody, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you, Louis. Good morning. Appreciate you having me.
Sure thing. So in the intro, we talked about the unemployment rate. we don't know exactly how it's going to pan out, and we don't know how it's going to impact either mortgage defaults potentially or even real estate prices. What are you seeing in the market the past couple of months, and how are you advising your clients?
Yeah, it's been an interesting last few months, to say the least, Louis. And I think, you know, if we look at today versus just a couple months ago, we've seen some real unthawing or de-thawing of you know, folks that have been in a just purely in a holding pattern, because there's certainly many aspects of what we're going through with COVID that are unprecedented. So I think, you know, depending on the size of the client's portfolio, they've had a different strategy for navigating these turbulent times. If you're small, like we are in our own portfolio, then it's more manageable. And certainly depending on the type of product that, you know, what type of funds are you running, because, you know, there's an argument both ways. For non-performing, you've already sort of factored in that you're not getting payments. Although you have foreclosure moratoria that are, you know, presenting some real collection issues. And then the other side of that is if you're a performing fund, and you've modeled for that cash flow and you see some late pays and deferment and forbearance requests, then there's an argument for that side of the business on the performing side to have a little more volatility. But it's been interesting. I think, you know, each client has had a slightly different perspective and strategy, but it's definitely, you know, we came to a grinding halt, I think. And I'm not even just referring to like the non-QM market on the origination side, just funds that have a lot of assets and are trying to make sense of what to do next. So as a result, I think the acquisition side of the business versus the portfolio management really came into focus.
Yeah, I would totally agree. And it's a good point you make. There's different strategies. For example, PEMCO primarily is a liquidating fund. We don't carry performing assets, and your fund, I believe, is more of a performing fund. And there's large funds out there that have a large reperforming book on their balance sheet that I think may be at risk of a certain percent of the modified reperforming loans going to non-performing and not being able to come back. What are your thoughts on the reperforming market, and how are your funds performing in light of the COVID pandemic?
Yeah, I personally feel very comfortable where we're at holding RPLs, but it also goes to our buy box and how we have felt even pre-COVID about the importance of certain aspects and characteristics of a loan and of the borrower. So for example, if you have, if it's reperforming and was modified many years ago and they've got a good track record, as opposed to if it just, you know, the loan was just modified and reinstated and doesn't have any history of paying on time going into this period, I'd be much more fearful and concerned about that type of reperforming loan. In our case, number one, for us in terms of importance is that the loans have a lot of equity. And I think that's one of the best protections and buffer that you can go into a situation like this, because the borrower has a greater attachment to the property. If their nest egg is in the property, they've got a lot to lose there. They're very careful, as opposed to when, you know, and we saw this in the Great Recession, we saw a lot of underwater homes and strategic defaults where folks just said, look, I'm happy to give you the keys back. That's a very different perspective, different psychology for the borrower. So that's one major protection, that you have a disruption of cash flow in some cases, because you know you're going to have some folks that are displaced or furloughed or unemployed. And, you know, maybe they're relying on every bit of their paycheck to make the payment each month. We have a fair number of borrowers like that. And what I think we've done well, though, is just have communication. I mean, I've read a lot of articles where they're talking about, you know, once the foreclosure and eviction moratoria are up, there's going to be some real carnage. And it's because people aren't talking. You know, lenders and the borrowers aren't talking, and the tenants. I think the communication is really key. And that's another part of why we feel good about having a cash flowing portfolio, even in these times, is the equity, the pay history, the fact that we looked at credit when we bought, that meant something to us. It's a good indication of future performance. But that's how I think we've navigated the RPL market and why I feel good about it.
Are you purchasing your loans already reperforming, or are you buying them NPL and getting them reperforming?
Vast majority of the time they are already reperforming. So somebody generally years ago, prior lender that we purchased the loan from, did that work and got them reinstated or modified. And, you know, certainly there's some benefit to those loans. If you're looking at, you know, if there's any deferred principal or deferred interest on top of your UPB when you buy, oftentimes a seller is not necessarily pricing that in. Some do, but that's another advantage of buying RPLs. So we typically are not looking to work out the loan. Certainly there's a great rationale for that. And if you're set up as a shop with to work out loans and to buy them cheaper as NPL in most cases and do that work yourself, you can certainly reap the rewards. That's just not how we're set up. It's, you know, I think at the end of the day, you have to kind of decide who you want to be and where you want to focus your time and what kind of conversations you want to have. And it's not wrong. It's just for us. I just like mailbox money, passive income. I think cash flow is the, you know, holy grail of finance. And so we prefer to just have a little lower maintenance portfolio where You know, we have to have some borrower outreach, but you know, to remind folks and really work with the servicer to make sure that they're doing the follow up. But you know, most of our borrowers are, you know, coming in 10, 15 days late, but they're not rolling 30, 60, 90.
Before we get into what you're doing today that is different than pre-COVID, can you give the audience an idea of what are you generally paying for a reperforming? I'm assuming it's capped at a percent of UPB since they all have lots of equity. Are you in the 70s or 80% of UPB?
Yes, we are in the 70s and 80s of UPB often, but I've also acquired a lot of assets in the 50s and 60s even. But really what's driving that is just the current yield. So whatever the note rate is, and then from an IRR perspective, based on how you model it, maybe there's a balloon payment in the near term. So that's really more a determinant than a hard and fast cap on the percentage of UPB. I mean, so, and that's, I think that's something that I learned over time from other folks that we did advisory work with, and even on the non-performing side, I'll tell you, many years ago, actually right out of the great financial, the financial crisis, the Great Recession, we saw a lot of very big hedge funds capping, you know, their NPL purchases, regardless of how much equity, at like 75 of UPB. And then you started to see a shift to where if there was enough equity and the payoff was, you know, if the borrower had enough equity above the total collectible debt or payoff, then as a percentage of the UPB, you might see full UPB and then some. Now that's, I think, generally a more sophisticated shop that's able to get comfortable with collecting on those arrears. But that's, I think, just a decent illustration of how, you know, a cap on UPB is not always going to serve you well.
Right. Yeah, I completely agree. So what are you doing today that's different than pre-COVID?
Well, you know, as I kind of think of my time in a pie chart, and you know, the piece of the pie that's dedicated to portfolio surveillance, and you know, the amount of time pulling reports from the servicer and really understanding what's going on in the borrower's world, you know, that servicer oversight and borrower outreach, definitely a bigger percentage of my day and of my week now. So we've been doing a lot of that. I think we're starting to shift towards more, you know, acquisition effort and capital markets, because I think this is a great time to be raising capital. But we're really fine tuning our strategy, tightening the bolts on the operation, tightening the purse strings on the expenses, just being very deliberate in where we can cut costs, but at the same time, not retracting and going and hiding from this. I think there's a healthy balance between going out and seizing the opportunity, but also being very smart in terms of your cash management. And, you know, doing a lot of reading as well, whether it's the Wall Street Journal, Apple News on your iPhone tends to serve up a lot of different sources of news. And you, I got to tell you, and thank you, Lewis, you provide a really good sort of a consortium of different news outlets and great relevant information on the industry. So really understanding what's going on in the market today, I think, is something I feel like in the past I would just had my head down, was just grinding and didn't have as much time or as much willingness or desire to really get in and know exactly what's going on in the mortgage market, from, you know, rates to what's going on with you know, treasuries and understand, you know, obviously the foreclosure and eviction news, really understanding state by state. And then the other thing I'll say, and you and I have done this, is having lots of industry-related conversations with folks that are in the know that have different strategies than you and maybe similar strategies. So across the board, just saying, what are you seeing out there? And then collaborating, figuring out how can we find ways to work together. That's always been important, but I'd say it's even more important today. So that's a huge part of what we're doing today as well.
Yeah, I agree. I've talked to many people over the last, I've been on the phone probably like you for the last 2 months, pretty you know, 5 hours a day at least. The big question, I mean, people, what they're doing, like you had mentioned, is really focusing on their existing portfolio. The trading has come to, at least in our world of, you know, the RPL, MPL, REO world, is really slowed down. So I think investors, the big guys, are just kind of sitting on their portfolio. HUD just announced their HECM trade that was postponed, and auction that was postponed from March to the end of this month. So we're focusing on that. But the question is, how is this going to pan out over 18, 24 months? And from the many discussions I've had, either impacting real estate or mortgage defaults, it's really going to be the unemployment rate, because the loans are pretty solid. You know, Fannie Freddie has been pretty tight. I think FHA may have a problem on their hands. But I think it's not going to be, you know, real estate related impact. If there is a large one, it'll be whether or not people are able to get back to work, which is some of the numbers that I've read in the intro. You know, some economists are saying about 40% of the people that became unemployed during COVID are not going to get their jobs back, you know, right away or anytime in the near future. So I think that's like trying to figure out that crystal ball and where to strategize. There is lots of capital being raised. So there's lots of interest, but I think everybody's still sitting on the sideline and just kind of waiting for third or fourth quarter to see, to get some more transparency. Has your buy box changed at all as a result of the crisis?
You know, I'm happy to say that there's been just like slight tweaks to the buy box. In other words, we didn't get into this situation and say, boy, we really should have thought of this or that. I feel like, you know, as I go back to my early days in the business in 2009, you know, kind of learned that the stove is hot and understood leverage better and understood, you know, just like I mentioned earlier, as far as high LTV loans being very dangerous during these times. I think we will stay the course on the equity side of things, as far as deep equity and the loans that we buy and the pay history and the credit, as I referred to earlier. The one thing I would say, I've maybe examined a little bit closer and said, hey, is this the right thing to do, is the value band of assets that we buy. I think we're looking to have that, you know, to go up the credit spectrum a bit, but all, and also in terms of the collateral value, the home value, you know, $65,000 minimum value is kind of where we've been. And you know, a lot of folks have that we have worked with over the years have said, look, show me anything with $50,000 and up, and maybe even $40,000 and up. And I think that's a bit of a dangerous area here. So I would say that our minimum value going up to closer to $85,000, and depending, you know, market dependent as well. I'm not talking about $85,000 in New York. I'm talking about $85,000 in the Midwest, Rust Belt states, where that's, you know, you can get a decent home. So that's for a number of things. I mean, if you expect higher defaults and you're facing more foreclosure costs, you want those fixed foreclosure costs to be manageable. And it just doesn't pencil out to foreclose on a $40,000, you know, property. I mean, one, there's so much variability there. Once you get in, you realize it's actually 25, and then you've got, you know, just a massive amount of issues. And the foreclosure, even if it's uncontested, maybe it's going to run you $3,500, $4,500 bucks as a percentage of the home value. That's not very constructive towards making money. So that's the one thing I would say. And then just, you know, maybe if we were on the pay history, okay with a couple of 30 lates and maybe a 60 before over the last 12 or 18 months, we might look at that a little closer and say, look, how has the borrower performed in the last six? Are they pretty solid in the last six? How's that payment velocity, if you will? So pay history, looking at that closer. And then another thing I will tell you is, I feel like the demeanor of the borrower is something that's coming more into focus and under the microscope for us, because it's always been an important part to read collection comments, servicing notes, and understand, you know, how is the interaction with the borrower between the servicer and the borrower. But today, I feel it's even more important because, as I mentioned earlier, when people are not talking, when you've got 10 calls into the borrower and it's, you know, going straight to voicemail, or you just can't get them on the phone. That's not, and you can pick up on some of that in the collection comments, right? If they ever got behind, how did they handle it? Was the demeanor cooperative, or was it litigious, or, you know, were they disgruntled? I'm not looking to pick up a lot of issues where borrowers are mad at their lender and you know, in a really bad situation. You don't want to step into that necessarily, unless maybe you have a different strategy than ours. So that's the other piece that I think gets a little more granular than just saying, okay, check the box on value, how much equity, is the FICO there? I want to know more granularly what's going on with that borrower. And if there's any insight that you can glean into how they're making money today, you know, are they on fixed income and maybe there hasn't been a lot of disruption and they're still getting, you know, their income is not affected by COVID? Or is it one of those, you know, those many, many millions of folks that are now unemployed and they don't really have a viable solution to create income moving forward? Or if they're an entrepreneur or self-employed, is that business in that industry a winner or a loser coming out of COVID? We're in the, you know, a new world now. So some folks will do better, some folks will do the same, and some folks will do worse. You can't always pick up on that unless you're actually underwriting a new loan. But in some cases, especially if, you know, maybe the loan has been modified and somebody took the time to say, okay, well, let's look at your financial snapshot now, and you have that information, I think that's really key.
That was a big deal in the Great Recession, was trying to figure out the psychology of the borrower, because back then, properties upside down and whether they're going to keep their credit cards current or their home current was a big thing that we were trying to figure out. So it seems like that's something that we're going to be revisiting as well, trying to turn out, you know, the psychology and the borrower decision methodology on how they're managing their affairs. What, you started your business in 2009, right at the beginning of the Great Recession. What do you see that's different between then and today?
Well, I think that the whole underlying issues that we're facing today are different. I mean, putting aside how our, you know, in my personal situation is different, I just think that, you know, you mentioned earlier that maybe some of the issues are not so much real estate related moving forward, but more unemployment. I think we've got a lot of tailwinds for real estate. And I'm not saying that I think every market in the country is going to be okay. But it's like Sam Zell says, you know, we don't buy the market, we buy the deal. But there are some markets that I'm more concerned about. But I think that in general, I mean, we look at the headlines today, I think it was in Money. They put out that the 30-year fixed interest rate broke 3% for the first time in history. You had an average 30-year fixed rate mortgage of 3.15% last year. So that's average. We've broken below 3%. And that's very interesting for the argument of more home buyers coming in. And, you know, yes, you've got refi activity booming, but how affordable is a home at, you know, 2.75 versus 4 or 5%? That's a real tailwind in my view. So, and then you also have the inventory or supply constraints, right? I mean, I think that, you know, you just take a look at California, look at what Governor Newsom said a few years ago. He said, look, we need to quadruple the new housing starts, new home units from about 90,000 a year to 400,000, and bring online another 2.5 million housing units by 2025. Now, you know, that is a I think another tailwind for the market. And that's not to say that you're not going to have, you know, other issues where you could see some home price depreciation. In fact, we're looking at a deal right now where I've modeled in 5% home price depreciation just to be conservative year over year for, you know, a 2 or 3 year deal that we're getting into in California, just because, you know, I think that there's just so many unknowns and uncertainty. But I do think that the environment is fairly constructive. I mean, you saw, I think in April, 17% decline in existing home sales, but prices went up. And so, you know, also just looking at the activity, California Association of Realtors If I could focus on California for just a second, they put out a few weeks ago a pretty interesting slide deck just looking at what realtors were seeing and what the home price projections, the forecasts for Q2, 3, and 4, and year end, how that was going to look. And it was marginally down. But I think there's a lot of folks out there that are still looking to buy homes, and the environment with the undersupply and the rates being where they're at, I think is pretty constructive.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think there's going to be much of a housing crash per se, except I think there's going to be some bubbles. The catch 22 with the low interest rates is that credit has even gotten tighter with the COVID-19. So it bodes well for you know, the A credit type people or the wealthy to continue to snap up property and buy second homes and that sort of stuff. But the younger generation or those that are not in that spectrum of credit are still shut out of the market. So it's kind of a catch 22 in California. I'm in San Diego and you know, houses aren't cheap here. It's a certain type of buyer that's snapping up in California. I don't think it's a healthy environment. How should I say? I don't think it's necessarily a healthy environment because of this credit spectrum and the amount of potential home buyers that are being shut out in California. It's the same buyers, either the investors or the really well-to-do within the high credit spectrum. What do you see as the greatest opportunity in the next 12 to 24 months as this plays out?
Well, I think the opportunity is going to be that there are going to be some excellent deals that are going to come by way of relationship trades and you know, just being very, very disciplined in what you look at. If you've got limited capital, I think that's, you know, our view is that, you know, we used to do probably a few trades a month, I would say, on the acquisition side, and I would be very comfortable doing deals less often that are higher margin and that require more thinking. And so that's the discipline piece. If you've got, you know, fairly limited capital, I mean, certainly, as you mentioned, there is a lot of capital out there, trying to find good deals. But the seller finance side of the business, we're involved in that. So not just buying institutional paper from banks and hedge funds and family offices, but one-off opportunities where, I mean, look at the need for liquidity that everybody is. Just about everybody is looking for right now. If you've carried back a mortgage in a seller carry situation right now, you may be looking at that and saying, depending on your view of the market as well, you might just say, look, I'd rather have some cash right now. That is not an uncommon philosophy or perspective to say, I ought to be a little more cash heavy. I mean, look at, you know, Berkshire Hathaway and Warren Buffett and where they're at with, you know, protecting their cash position for opportunities. So I think seller finance will present some opportunities. We're looking at one right now that's extremely interesting. So there's that. And then, as I mentioned, the relationship trades, I think just having conversations and networking and not necessarily being in a comp or competitive environment where you just win the loans that you outbid everybody on. That's just still part of the nature of the business, and we certainly do that as well. I just don't want to rely 100% on it. I think having a lot of diversification across your channels where you're sourcing is really key. We're for the most part focused on just the residential side of the note business, but I'm having more and more conversations with folks that are looking for commercial opportunities. And depending on how you categorize apartments and multifamily, I'm hearing a lot of folks wanting to get into the apartment space as well. So, you know, and the other thing I would just say, as far as a trend, this is maybe less of an opportunity and more just an observation, is just with the COVID thing, I think people are starting to shift a little bit away from what was a trend for a while, which was moving towards, city center in various cities across the country. They wanted to be right in the mix of things, close to walking distance to the restaurants, the museums, and so on, and be in the mix. And now, for obvious reasons, we're seeing a little bit of a shift, I think, in terms of what we're hearing out there as far as folks moving out more into the suburbs and whatnot. So just kind of just something to think about as far as trying to piece the whole puzzle together and say, what's happening in the market? Where are those opportunities? Those are some of the things that we're looking at.
And we're just about out of time. The question is, what are your thoughts on the economic outlook? There's ranges that we're going to, bounce right back. There's to the, all the opposite side that this is going to drag on for 6 or 7 years. And the industry, the economy and the way we function has fundamentally changed. I think commercial real estate, that's a whole nother podcast, but I think they're in for a rude awakening with how many people are going to be starting to work remote after this crisis. I know in my office building, they cater towards small offices, and they have several buildings here in San Diego. And I spoke to the manager about a week ago, and he said over the last 30 days, 30% of the tenants gave notice just right out of, within 30 days last month. And so, but just in closing, what do you think the economic outlook is going to be and where we'll end up after this crisis?
Yeah, I think, we'll always end up stronger on the other side of it just because of the things that we learn. But the million-dollar question, as you say, is what does that look like? What's the shape of the recovery? Certainly there's the V shape and the W and the L and the U and the swoosh and everybody's got different timelines. I would probably put myself in the category that thinks we're going to have a slower than expected recovery, more prolonged. And a lot of that has to do with I think the extended period of double digit unemployment. I think we'll see, some good numbers, and then it's going to take a long time for that to drop. And part of that is what you mentioned as far as the paradigm shift here. I think some businesses saw what they could do with efficiencies and lowering expenses and saying, okay, maybe this is the opportunity for me to get a little lighter on payroll and whatnot. So I think you're going to see a lot of that. And then, in terms of, the commercial piece is very interesting. I think that's why I love that we're in residential, because the role of the home in the COVID crisis has expanded. People value a home more, I think, today than they ever have with the shelter in place and the security of that. So, I think we've got a bit of a rough road ahead. And the other thing that really concerns me is that, you saw Mnuchin go on 60 Minutes and talk about the unlimited firepower. And I just don't know that that's the case. I mean, I think it's been necessary, the level of Fed support and stimulus. But we'll see what's on the horizon here in the next couple of months as some of this starts to dry up and more stimulus is needed. But at some point, that has to ease, right? I mean, the national debt and where we're at with the Fed balance sheet going up by, good several or handful of trillion dollars, there's no free lunch. I think you've got taxes, you've got possible inflation, but there's some repercussions of that down the road. And that's what I'm really concerned about longer term and how we manage that.
That is a true statement. The policy always has unintended consequences that we have to endure 2 or 3 years down the road. Well, Cody, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. Great information, and stay healthy, and we'll talk soon.
Sounds great, Lewis. I appreciate you having me.
Sure thing. That wraps up today's podcast. Cody Fowler, Fowler Financial. He runs a firm that works with investors, large and small, nationwide on the acquisition and the management of real estate notes. Thanks for tuning in. Our podcast can be found on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and other popular distribution centers. Capital Markets Today Group is a group you can join on LinkedIn. Stay connected with us. Thanks for tuning in, and we will be talking soon.
This has been a production of Capital Markets Today, a leading aggregator of news, tweets, and podcasts for mortgage, real estate, and capital market industries. You can subscribe to the Capital Markets Today podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Libsyn, and other major podcast distributors. go to www.capital-mt.com for more information and to subscribe to our daily newsletter. Find out why we have over 50,000 subscribers worldwide.